arms. Hour two kicking off in the Fan Run Studios. Let's hit some hour two headlines. Appreciate you guys holding it down. The most impressive thing about to me about Charlie doing 5 hours of radio every day is that he never needs a bathroom break. Couldn't be me. Hour two headlines. What do you got, Cam?
All right. You know, in the days that we're now talking about all this NIL deals and money and how much players are getting paid.
Right.
Sometimes we don't always see how much coaches are getting paid.
Right.
But we did just find out that Coach K, in the year 2020, got paid the most ever by a coach.
Okay.
The USA Today obtained some school tax filings from Duke. And in 2020, Coach K was obviously Duke's highest paid employee. And he was credited with $13.7 million in total earnings.
My goodness.
He basically had a $3.3 million base salary. He got $2 million in bonus pay and incentives, $7.2 million in deferred compensation, and $1.1 million in retirement and other deferred compensation. You know, totaling up to that 13.7. Huge number from Coach K there. Just another thing he can throw on his resume and record book.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah. That's absurd. But yeah, highest college basketball coach ever. Pretty wild there.
That was for 2020, the COVID year?
Yeah. When all the schools are broke, apparently. Not sure where they got that from, but whatever. They paid it to him, and yeah. Lots of money there.
We had our NBA draft lottery last night.
Yeah.
The Magic did it again. The Magic got the number one pick.
They
got me the trivia win yesterday. Not to bring it back up and brag, Charlie, but after
Stackhouse brought it up.
Oh, did he?
Really?
Yeah. I said, the Thunder with the fourth best odds actually got the third pick. And he goes, I wonder how you knew they had the fourth best odds.
That's pretty good. We got the second pick, though, by the way. Not the third.
I couldn't remember.
So the Orlando Magic get the number one pick. They will get their choice of, I guess, the big three. Feels like it's, I guess, Jay Navi could sneak in the talk, but it's going to be one of Jabari, Paolo, or Chet, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Do you like Chet as a prospect?
I don't know what to think of him. I mean, he's really skinny, obviously, but he looks like an alien, so I don't know.
I wouldn't want to take him at number one if it was my team, probably.
I'd be scared to take him in the
top 10. I trust Jabari more.
If I'm the Magic, I would rather swing for the fences on a generational talent, and I think...
Fair enough.
I mean, is it fair to say that, like, Chet has the best, the highest ceiling between Jabari and Paolo? Like, I mean, I feel like... Or Paolo, how the hell you say
it? Yeah, I mean, if he hits the marks that they, like, think he could possibly get, yeah.
Right.
Because he... Just a big man with handles, shoot, pass, everything.
So if I'm the Orlando Magic, I think I'm swinging for the fences there.
Mm-hmm. I do hope Jabari falls to the Thunder. I think he would be good with their young core.
Yeah. But if I'm the Thunder, I'd also just take the chance with Chet as well.
Yeah, both of those teams can kind of do whatever at this point.
Like maybe that's why we didn't really care about the draft lottery, because the top three teams were like, you know, Houston, Oklahoma City, and Orlando, which we don't really care about any of those. Although, like, all three, you know, were picking at the top of the draft last year, so, like, you could add some more players to a core that has some other young, talented players, right? Like,
yeah,
the Magic have Jalen Suggs, and I know he didn't have a great season, but, you know, Wagner was pretty good, so maybe if they get a third guy
Bomber
there.
Bomber ended up being decent.
Yeah, you at least have, like, a third, you know, three guys that you're trying to build around. Oklahoma City, of course, has Giddey, and they even have Shai Gilgeous, and they got a couple of, you know.
They had a couple other young guys that played pretty well at times.
And a million draft picks, so, like, they're swinging for the fences.
They got two top 12s this year.
Same for Houston with Jalen Green and
Porter. And Kevin Porter.
Yeah, and, I mean, they have that center they drafted. They had three first-round picks last year. I mean, the Seguin.
Who was the center they drafted again?
Seguin or something like that from Turkey or whatever. Yeah. He was pretty solid, too. So, you know, all these teams are trying to add pieces to cores of young cores, and then you get the Kings at four, and you're just like, please don't draft me. Please don't draft me. Please don't.
I was hoping Portland would sneak up there.
So is Dame Lillard. And
you could see his reaction. I don't know if you saw, like, when they announced it, he kind of just like, I think he was like, I'm about to let me get out of this city.
Yeah. Yeah.
At that point,
I don't know, man. Him and Keon Johnson, they're about to tear up the NBA together next year.
Oh, man, if you're Dame. Just run from the grind, bro. Just say you want to get traded.
Yeah,
I hope he stays with Portland.
It's about
forever.
That time, man. You just need to go try to get you a ring if you can at this point.
I don't
it's
know.
Not happening in Portland. You're out of time there.
I don't know what the return would be for Dame Lillard.
I don't either at this point.
Yeah.
One of the best players in the NBA.
He's also old, though.
Yeah, and he wasn't
old, is he?
Great this 30? Year before he
he's
had
on the
one.
I want to say he's like probably at this point at least 31, but.
I was going to say like 32, 33.
I mean, he's 31, turns 32 okay. in July. So, I mean,
he's
like.
He's got probably, what, like 4 good years?
Yeah, he's also got like $200 million worth of salary, and I don't know like what they're going to do to try to put talent around him.
Yeah.
If you're a good free agent, like, are you signing to go play with Dame? I mean, maybe if you're Zach LaVine, you're like, hey, I want to go play with Dame. He seems cool. Portland seems like a cool place, I guess. I don't know. Maybe.
I love Dame. I'd want to go play with Dame.
I just don't know, like, if I would sign up. Like, I just don't know. Like, they seem multiple pieces away from trying to be anywhere close to a championship. The good news is, like, they pretty much got rid of all their salary. So, like, they have a pretty blank slate, actually, in terms of trying to fill out this roster free agent-wise. So, like, maybe you can put some pieces around Dame and try to build something for, like, next year.
Wait, so what pick do they have, you said?
Number 7.
Seven?
So, like, at number 7, like, you're not...
I think you can get a good player at 7 this year.
A good player, but not one that's, like, going to change your luck. Like, right here on this mock draft I'm reading right now, they get, I mean, I guess Keegan Murray. I just don't know if I want that. I mean, I guess if you're trying to build around Dame, it makes sense to try to get an older guy that we don't have to worry about bringing like a 19-year-old up. So like he'd be a little bit older and could score. I don't know.
I think like the entire lottery is full of guys that can make an impact year one.
Make an impact, sure, but like take a bad team to make them respectable, I would say probably not. Like number 7. Like I don't know if you're getting a guy that's going to turn you into like a good team.
No, but I think you're looking whoever the rookie of the year is next year. I think is going to be a guy that's like, you know, a legitimate rising star because of how good this draft class is. And
I would say it'd be one of the top 3 guys. Sure, if I had to bet, I'd bet on either Banchero or Chad or Jabari. I mean,
I'd bet on Jaden Ivey.
Okay, maybe because of the Kings. No,
I bet on Johnny Davis, Jaden Ivey, Keegan Murray, or Benedict Mathurin.
I would bet on one of the top 3 and give
I'd
you the field.
I bet on one of those older guys that I think will be on a decent team that'll still get to play a lot but is surrounded by better parts.
Well, that's what happened last year or this year. It's last year with Barnes. I mean, he was on a team with more talent and got to thrive a little bit, so maybe. Any other headlines, Cam?
Yeah. NFL met with Deshaun Watson yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Haven't really seen much news coming out of that necessarily, but they were meeting to, you know, try to determine if they're going to put disciplinary action or anything.
There was some news coming there. There was, Deshaun had to admit that's one of his...
Okay, yeah, I got that,
Masseurs.
Too, yeah,
yeah said that,
Solis.
Or, yeah.
This came from, like, a testimony he had last week, but it came out yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, he testified under oath that Ashley Solis, who was the first woman to come forward with claims, cried at the end of one of their massage sessions.
Do we know, like, where she was at in terms of – I know you said she was the first that came forward, but do we know where she ranked in terms of, like, number of women she was in this massage
she
line or whatever?
She was the first therapist to go public with her claims.
Dude,
so
I know, but, like –
I don't know.
I'm assuming she wasn't the last person to give him a massage. Like, I'm assuming he was still being a deviant and getting massages from people afterwards and like didn't get tipped off to the fact that he made this girl cry that like, hey, this is a...
Well, he also under oath was talked about how he did send her an apology text message after the fact. Basically, like under oath and everything, he was like, he said, I sent a text. I said, sorry about you feeling uncomfortable. Never were the intentions. Let me know if you want to work in the future. My apologies. And they asked him why he sent an apology. And he said, well, she was teary-eyed, and I was trying to figure out what was going on. So I assumed she was uncomfortable in whatever reason. And we talked about working in the future. And so I said, we can work in the future. Let me know. And I sent my apologies for whatever reason she was teary-eyed for. So that's just...
So he acted like he didn't know why she was teary-eyed?
Yeah.
It's like, whatever I did to upset you, I'm sorry, is essentially the route he tried to go.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, that was one of the things that came out from the, you know, testimonies last week. He still, you know, has to do the final trials and stuff, you know, with these cases before it's all kind of, I guess, cleared up isn't the word, but at least the legal process is done. And then, you know, still waiting to see what the NFL will do with it, but.
The number I saw going around is that they expect him to get a 3 or 4 game suspension.
Oh, I hope 4 games. Please give me 4 games.
Well, I really thought it'd be like 6.
Please give me 4.
3 or 4 was the number that started floating around.
He needs a 4. 4
yesterday.
He wears 4. You just got to give it to him. And it's not like the Falcons play from week 4 or anything. But
it'll probably be a 4 game suspension that gets appealed down to 3.
I know. That's exactly what's going to happen. I'm going to be so mad. Oh, Lord.
You're going to be excited first and then, and then sad. I think
that would check out.
That's my prediction.
That would check out.
Well, speaking of suspensions, Major League Baseball has officially suspended Matt Harvey 60 games for dealing oxycodone in connection with the Tyler Skaggs case. Tyler Skaggs was the Angels pitcher who died. They found a bunch of drugs in his system, and he's addicted to basically opioids. And I don't know if it was heroin they got him or whatever, but they basically found out that Matt Harvey was the guy helping get him drugs, and he is suspended 60 games, which is kind of like he's not actually in prison.
Yeah, it's also surprised he's not.
Kind of crazy. It was only 60.
Yeah. Like if you give you Trevor Bauer games, 2 years,
you get 80 games for PEDs.
And if you give Trevor Bauer 2 years for,
it's absurd.
I don't know what Trevor Bauer did or didn't do. I know, in court they said he did nothing. Mm-hmm. But they gave him 2 years plus a year he already missed. And then, this guy helps get this guy killed. And
it seems kind of like assisted murder, but whatever.
I think they gave him immunity to
for testifying. Yeah. But that's like with the courtroom. Yeah, it shouldn't be with Major League Baseball. Yeah.
Which I wonder if the Orioles would just be like, yeah, we don't want this guy anymore. Why that, we? It's an aging
he's not very
pitcher
good,
that's
right?
Currently in minor league rehab. We can just leave it be and leave the drug dealer out of the MLB.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Go back to headlines. Say what else you got for hour 3. Mm-hmm. Stick with us. It's Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio. CBS Sports released their annual coaching rankings.
Ooh.
Luckily, we already got all 65 done, so we don't have to wait for part 2 tomorrow.
Oh, nice.
Part 2 is out now. This came out yesterday. We didn't talk about it because it was a busy day, or we didn't really care. And now here we are. We have all 65 rankings.
Okay.
The worst coach in college football Power 5 is?
Is it whoever coaches Akron?
No, he's not. That's not Power 5, Cam.
Oh, Power 5.
Jeff Collins.
I didn't think about it.
It's not a bad guess, I guess. But they went with,
Or is it a new hire?
Yeah, the last 4 are all new hires. Brent Pry from Vatek. Mike Elko from Duke. Jake Dickert from Washington State, and Joey McGuire from Texas Tech. So, those are the guys.
Okay, so the worst incumbent.
The worst incumbent.
It's got to be Jed Fish or Jeff Collins,
it's
right?
Jed Fish, and somehow he is ranked below Tony Elliott. I guess Tony Elliott gets to be ranked higher just because
he's not him.
And Carl Durrell from Colorado is.
I don't think I knew who that is.
Well, he helped Colorado be one of the biggest surprises of the COVID year, going 4-2. Didn't they make the conference championship game?
I think they did that year.
And then they went.
What the disrespect, Ben.
And then they went 4-8 last year.
So he's consistent, a 4-win guy.
He's
yeah.
a 4-win guy.
He's a 4-win guy. If you only have 6
if you
games,
get COVID year. Watch out for Jeff Durrell or what?
Yeah.
John Durrell, Jeff.
Carl.
Carl Durrell.
Yeah. Yeah.
Carl,
yep.
Colorado.
Jeff Collins comes in at 58th. Vandy's Clark Lee comes in at 57th.
Oh, come on. He's at least a top 52 guy.
What a fall from grace over probably 4 years ago, Dino Babers.
Oh, no.
All the way down at 56.
Oh, no, Dino.
He went 10-3 in 2018.
I loved Dino.
I guess they did go, what, 1-10 2 years ago? 5-7 last year.
Yeah, they were better once they let Garrett Schrader take over last year. I think, you know, with Garrett Schrader as the set starter instead of Tommy DeVito, they'll be better this year.
This might be the biggest fall from last year's list. Herm Edwards falls 34 spots from 21st to 55.
He should have never been
21st.
He should have never been 21st.
They were pretty good.
Not really.
I mean, they went 8-5, right, in 2021?
But it was like an unimpressive 8-5.
Wait, not last year. They went, what? Was it 2019 they were pretty good? Was it 2019 they were good? And then COVID last year, they only played 4 games during COVID. Either way, the highest ranked new coach is Dan Lanning for some reason. He's up at 54th.
Okay. I would love to know.
I guess they just think he's going to be a good recruiter and like not have to has the best situation. I don't know. I take that back, actually. Marcus Freeman's ranked higher. I think that's the newest coach. Let's see here. Okay, yeah, sounds good.
Okay, Freeman's, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah. One of the biggest risers, Shane Beamer, up to 41st in the country.
That makes sense.
Says when you shock the world by going 7-6, when you're expected to win 3 or 4 games, you get to rise the rankings. World.
I mean,
the world was talking.
Yeah, the people were couldn't believe it.
Okay.
Where do you think Josh Heupel comes in on this list? We haven't gotten to him so far in the top, what'd I say, the top 40? 41. Yeah, he's a top 41 coach. Okay. So where do you think he comes in at? He's ahead of Shane Beamer, so I think that'll make sub-Tennessee fans happy.
Yeah. I'm going to go 27.
27, okay.
I'm feeling 24.
24? Nope. You're both too high. He comes in at number 33.
Oh, that was going to be my first guess. Jeez.
Two spots ahead of...
That was going to be my first guess. We
shifted back, yeah.
Three spots ahead of Greg Schiano.
Okay.
In case you're still holding a grudge there.
Okay.
I actually
two spots ahead of Sonny Dykes, who also almost got hired here at Tennessee, reportedly.
So far we're two for two.
And then one spot of Jeff Hafley from Boston College. Like,
yes.
But, however, one spot behind Billy Napier, who has never coached a Power 5 game.
Boo.
So I guess not in terms of first-year coaches, but he's a first-year Power 5 coach. Yeah. So he goes from unranked to 32nd.
Jeez.
He comes to Gainesville having won 2 straight Sun Belt titles. And he claimed at least a share of the Sun Belt West in all 4 seasons. That success, combined with prior stops at Alabama and Clemson, are just some of the reasons to have optimism for how things will go with the Gators.
The Gators.
How do we feel about old Billy being ranked ahead of Josh, the hype man?
Hype was going to whoop him.
I think that's fair. I mean, I think when you can take over a Sun Belt program and consistently win double-digit games and be in the conversation for New Year's Six Bowls, like that's a pretty strong credit to who you are as a coach. And then when you're putting guys in the NFL too, at a pretty consistent like clip, I think it's fair to have him above Josh Heupel.
I mean, how many guys did Louisiana put into the NFL?
I mean, like like 3 or 4 years.
Like UCF put a couple in as well. So I mean, Heupel kind of did the same thing. And
yeah, but
you could point
UCF
and say like
a better program, I think, than Lafayette. And
I mean, is it when it comes to like NFL talent though? Because I mean, like, isn't Louisiana the second biggest school in Louisiana? Like, is it?
Well, UCF's the biggest school in Florida.
Well, I know, but not from a football standpoint. Obviously, like, there's 3 bigger when it comes to football powerhouses. Like, Louisiana State, like LSU, is obviously at an advantage because they're the only like Power 5 school like in the state that matters. The only Power 5 school in general, right? Like, that's it, right? Yeah. So, like, they get the pick of the crop, and Louisiana's a talent-rich state, but, like, the guys that stay at the Group 5 level, like at UCF, like, you know, Louisiana's got just as much of a base as Florida does. I mean, I guess, right? I mean, like, I know there's some other Group 5 schools, but, I mean, there's Group 5 schools in Florida that are pretty good, too. Especially, like, when you're considering, like, Lane Kiffin.
You're also in a better conference, though.
Yeah, sure.
Like, there's argument, or at least there was an argument at the time for the American being the 6th power conference and the Power 6.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No one's ever said that about the Sun Belt.
They haven't. But I'm just saying, like, the hype man's put some guys in the NFL, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would say probably at this point better guys, right?
Gabriel Davis.
I mean, he's better than anything that like Louisiana's put in there, right, so far?
I'd say, yeah. Who did they just have? Did Elijah Mitchell come from there, the running back?
I know they put out Trey Rockets last year.
I know people give Florida a lot of credit and give Billy Napier a lot of credit for, you know, the word I've been seeing getting thrown around recently is that he's putting the right recruiting emphasis on recruiting. Like, he's trying to, you know, he knows how important it is to recruit at Florida. Mm-hmm. Dan Mullen didn't get it. So then I look at the upcoming class rankings and he's ranked 30th currently, which it's early. I get that. But it seems weird to like be praising his recruiting right now when he finished, you know, right now he's 30th. Five commits, 2 4 stars. Meanwhile, like, you know, Josh Heupel helped with his money cannon going boom, sure, but like you got a top seven class right now. So like I just don't really I mean, unless I'm just giving Heupel too much credit for last year, maybe that's possible. Maybe that's possible to give Heupel too much credit for a 7-5 season. And they write about Josh Heupel that they smell some SEC bias here. Yes, he exceeded expectations at Tennessee in his first year, putting together a fun offense and leading the team to a 7-6 mark. However, if he had done the same thing at a program in another Power 5 conference, would it warrant a 19-spot climb? I'm skeptical. All that aside, he's the first Tennessee coach to finish the season in Knoxville with a winning record since Lane Kiffin.
Jeez.
He rises 19 spots. Simply sticking around for a second season puts him ahead of schedule from that perspective. That's funny, CBS.
That's
We're still making Lane Kiffin jokes 13 years later.
Yeah, thanks, Tom.
Good job, Fornelli. That's an original joke.
Rude.
So, like, I mean, you know, 7-5 regular season. I don't understand how you could say it's SEC biases and then say, look, if he went 7-5 in any other conference, would we care? Well, of course not. He went 7-5 in the SEC. Like, do you think this team would have gone better in the ACC? Because I do.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. ACC was garbage.
Like, when you tell me that, like,
this team would have won 10, like, maybe 10 games in the ACC.
Yeah.
Probably 10 games.
Yeah, I mean, like, we saw what Pittsburgh
did. Unless you ran into, like, Pitt and Clemson.
Well, like, we saw what Pittsburgh did. And I think, like, if you played Pittsburgh again with Hendon Hooker as your starting quarterback, I think you beat them. Now, you know, whatever. You can argue about that. There's no sense in arguing hypotheticals. But, like, this is a 9 or 10 win team in the ACC, most likely.
Yeah,
Tennessee fans, you said avoid Clemson. Like, depends on when you got Clemson. Like, if you got him at the end of the year,
yeah,
sure, maybe.
Too.
If you got him at the beginning or middle of the year, like, I think Tennessee might beat him.
You have a shot. Yeah.
It's like, I mean,
not gonna score.
Throwing out the bowl game, that was a bad loss. Anyone who listens to the show knows I was mad about that. But like the other five losses, all pretty defendable. I mean, I think you should have won the Ole Miss game.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should have won the Pittsburgh game. Like, all those teams were good. And then three of your losses, of course, to Florida and, you know, Bama and Georgia. So,
I mean, again, there's always what ifs. Like,
sure.
If Joe Milton hadn't gotten hurt, how quickly would he figured out that Hendon Hooker was better? If
maybe
he
never.
Would have,
yeah.
Would he still just be like 49 right now?
Yeah, maybe.
50.
Maybe.
He'd be 65th in my book if he kept Milton the whole season.
So I don't know.
When I look at the guys, like, just filling out the whatever 60 something through 26,
uh-huh.
The guys immediately ahead of him, I mean, Mike Leach, like,
well, like, immediately ahead of him, we said it was Napier,
yeah,
and then, like, Chris Klieman from Kansas State. I mean, I think he had a good year.
I like him a lot. He won championships at North
yeah.
Dakota State.
No, I have no problem with him being ranked ahead.
Brohm, I guess they did beat you, but I think he's a better coach than Jeff Brohm.
Went 9-4, but that's coming off of a 6-12, like, over the COVID and the year after that. It's like, I don't know what Jeff Brohm is. Obviously, we know he doesn't recruit at the same level, which is funny to say about Josh Heupel because we don't really think he's a good recruiter. But, hey, he's backed by a money cannon right now. Chip Kelly, David Shaw, whatever. I mean, those guys were great at one point. I don't know if they still are. I don't even know how you could really even call, like, David Shaw a top 30 coach at this point. Like,
I haven't heard anything from Stanford in the past 5 years.
I mean, they beat you, what, US,
they beat
Oregon last year?
They beat Oregon.
Oh, yeah.
They beat one ranked Pac. They ruined the Pac-12s. Playoff hopes every year.
Okay.
They should have lost that game, but for some reason their like backup quarterback just threw nonstop 8-yard slants that Oregon couldn't stop, and then they threw jump balls in the end zone that Oregon couldn't stop. So
I do remember that game.
I don't know how I feel about David Shaw being in the top 30 because it doesn't feel like he's a top 30 coach. At one time we thought he was a top 10 coach.
Yeah, what a fumble of the bag by him to not like go to the NFL.
He could have easily gone to the NFL.
Maybe even better there.
Chip Kelly, we said, Pat Narduzzi, Mike Leach, like, you know, I don't really have any issues with that. I'm not going to sit here and say that Heupel's better than Mike Leach.
Where did they go? 7-5 also?
Yeah.
I know SEC?
I know whose offense looked better last year.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I mean, if you're an offensive coach like Mike Leach, like I know whose offense looked better last year. I know it was Josh Heupel's.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we're giving him credit for what he did at Texas Tech, you know, 15 years ago, sure. And, you know, what he did at Washington State, sure. But, like, so far he's done at Mississippi State. Doesn't really impress me much. And I think we all think that, like, Tennessee's going to have a better offense this upcoming year.
Mm-hmm.
Then Mike Leach will. And with the way you're recruiting, and it looks like you're going to have Carnell Tate coming here to team up with Nico, I think this offense is going to look better for the next 5 years here in Tennessee than Mike Leach's will ever again. So, like, maybe I do have a problem with Mike Leach being ranked there, actually.
I just clicked on the Today's article.
Uh-huh.
And the name that I saw at 25 has already pissed me off.
Who is it?
Dave Durin. At NC State.
Really?
Why does everyone love him so much? What has he done?
He went 18-7 the last 2 years. I mean, I'm not saying like we should have hired him over Pruitt's because, you know, we didn't really get excited about the prospect of hiring Dave Durin. But I think he's a pretty solid coach. Do I think he's better than Heupel? I don't know. I don't think Heupel's proven he's better than him just yet. So I have no problem with Durin being at 25. I think he's better than Mike Leach.
I don't.
Okay.
I do not like Dave Durin at all.
Okay.
I mean, last year.
I thought NC State was pretty solid last year. I mean
like, I guess, but like 18-7 in the ACC over the last 2 years when you're getting, I mean, NC State's playing like three bye games every year too.
Well, I think is 18-7 the overall record or just like the, I guess it is the full overall record. Okay.
So, I mean, if eight of those wins are non-conference.
Sure.
Then you're just 10-7 in the ACC.
Well, they do play what? Two? Don't they play two Power Five schools?
They play
two Power Five schools in the ACC, right?
Do they?
I thought so, because that's why they always, like, that's why sometimes they end up with the weird, like, we're playing a conference school that's not a conference game.
They do that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think, like, they have a rule where you have to play two Power Five teams. Maybe there's, like, an exception for, like, some good Group Five teams, but I don't think they necessarily have the same amount of, like, easy bought wins that SEC schools have.
No, I mean, they lost to South Carolina. Played Marshall, Furman, ECU.
Last year, they played Mississippi State as well, right?
Yeah, they did.
So, yeah. So, that would be, like, what? Mississippi State and do they have another
year,
one last year?
Last year they played USF, Mississippi State, Furman, and Louisiana Tech.
Yeah.
And then so an ACC schedule.
Maybe I don't think USF would be on like their approved like Group 5 schools. That would be actually good. So maybe the ACC doesn't have that rule. I thought they did, but maybe not.
And then, you know, they played Liberty is their only non-conference game in 2020.
COVID year.
And the rest were ACC games. So
yeah.
I mean, I guess five. So they went.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like in 2019 they only had one against West Virginia.
They went 14 and they went 14-6 against the ACC over the last 2 years.
I think that's pretty solid. Again,
I don't think that's top 25 solid.
I'm not going to like cape up and argue on Dave Durin's behalf, but I think he's proven enough to be at 25 and not make me be like, whoa, what the hell's going on here? Cam, how do you feel about him? Like, I don't really have strong feelings about him one way or the other, but
that's
like,
that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I think he's a solid coach. They're always competitive, but they also, like, you don't ever expect them to necessarily, like, compete for the championship over there.
I guess the impressive thing I've been with him is, like, in 2019, it looked like it had fallen apart, and he went 4-8.
Yeah.
And I do give him credit for rallying to go 17-7 after that.
Yeah.
Because he went 9-4, 9-4, and then boom, 4-8. And then you're like, okay, well, this guy's a fraud. And then he turned it back around and
went
8-4.
Yeah, it's easy to like lose control at that point. Yeah. But yeah.
And last year, I guess they had a bowl game canceled too, right? Because didn't they? They were mad about that and wanted to.
Yeah.
They could have got like their first 10 win season in a long time.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yep.
I guess it wouldn't be ever, but like since like Philip Rivers, maybe. Maybe
yeah,
ever.
It may have been ever, I want to say. Because it was really big. It was some sort of record.
Yeah,
so
they were very mad about it getting canceled, too. Mm-hmm. So you know, I don't feel strong about him, but I don't feel like it's crazy for him to raise, you know, rise 11 spots. Mel Tucker jumped 33 spots from 57 up to 24th. And now he's like, what, the second highest paid coach, the third highest paid coach, yeah. Something crazy like that?
What a glow up.
No thoughts on Mel Tucker. PJ Fleck.
Also pisses me off to see him there.
Row the boat, baby.
What'd they do last year? 9-4?
Yeah, I mean,
they're calling them a dark horse to win the Big Ten West this year, so I guess we'll see.
He just doesn't, to me, like, do anything to help them win games that they shouldn't win.
Yeah, I don't know if I judge that as much in college football as I do, like, the NFL. I do think, like, good coaches can, like, steal a couple games for in the NFL, but, like, in college, mm-hmm. I don't know. Sometimes you're just outgunned, and I feel like at Minnesota, like, he's probably going to be outgunned in a lot of them. And I'm not going to act like I watch a lot of Minnesota games either. Sam Pittman, number 22, up 28 spots.
Fair.
Okay.
I agree. I'd maybe even have him higher.
See, that's one of those weird ones. Like, I would like to see Sam Pittman without two of the best coordinators in the country. You know, when you have Kendall Briles and, you know, Barry Odom, like, you have two of the best guys in the country. Now, that's, you know, I give Pittman credit.
It's just, like, part of it, though.
Yeah, I give Pittman credit for that, but, like, I would like to see, like, what happens if he didn't have those guys. Could he, like, make another hire to do that? Because, like, those have pretty much been his coordinators the entire time he's been in Arkansas, correct? And they pay him big money to keep him around?
Yeah.
But, again, that's the skill of a coach, and he recruits the Hogs, and, you know, he's the face of the program. So, I guess for right now, I have no problem with that. Pat Fitzgerald, Mack Brown, both those guys fall some spots after being around the top 10 last year. Mario Cristobal, Lane Kiffin into the top 20 at number 18. The offense is there. Do you feel like this is a prove it year for Lane? Like, hey, like, was it Matt Corral, or can you prove it? Can you do it again? Is it fair to say, like, do it again, like, 1 year later? Does he lose the benefit of the doubt? If not, like,
yeah, I think he's gonna obviously probably not get 10 wins or whatever, but I think they got to be decent and competitive. Yeah.
They need to be
know?
Like an 8-4.
Eight and four is what I was gonna say. Without looking at, like, who their, like, non conference schedule is, but, like. Mm-hmm. Feels like 8-4 should be what they go back to.
Because, yeah, you could see, like, a Matt Corral elevating you to a win or two more than.
It's still wild to me that he didn't get any real offers last year when you saw how many jobs came open. Like, maybe he's still just going to be the plan for Auburn whenever they eventually run out Harsin, which is just a matter of time. Like, maybe they'll be the team that calls him. Ole Miss plays Troy, Central Arkansas, at Georgia Tech, at Tulsa as their non-conference. So, like, yeah, you should go at least 500 in the SEC when you get to play both Kentucky and Vanderbilt, right?
Yeah, right, yeah, absolutely.
And you get a home game against Mississippi State, so, like, you should find a way to win one other game. Home for Auburn, at LSU, at A&M, Bama, at Arkansas. So, yeah, 8-8 should be, you know, the expectation there this year if you're a top 20 coach.
8-4, yeah.
Dave Clawson, I feel like he's pretty deserving. Mark Stoops at number 16.
It's hard to argue against his record, especially at a school like Kentucky, but I still think he's an overrated coach when it comes to his in-game coaching and just game management, clock management, whatever else. But you can't argue that he's done a good job developing talent and rebuilding a school.
I mean, he's maximized Kentucky.
Right.
I mean, I think that's a compliment. Do I think he could do? Do I think he could go to, like, when Florida State called him? Do I think he would have turned Florida State into a contender? Probably not, but I do think he would have got him to being respectable.
Yeah,
you know, I always talk about these level of coaches that can, like, maximize, like, recruiting and, like, building a culture and, like, get you to, like, a respectable level. I always talk about how Butch Jones is that guy. Like, Butch Jones gets you to 8-4, and, like, that's great. And then you need another coach to take you to the next level. I feel like Mark Stoops is probably more like Butch Jones in that regard.
I think his tenure with Kentucky is going to implode soon.
Really? See, I don't. I think, like, they'll just be happy to pay him and build a statue for him as long as he keeps going, like, 7-5, 8-4.
What I think is if he continues to go 8-4, 8-4, 8-4, you know, 7-5, mix in a 9-3 here, the expectations will eventually reset. And I think they're getting closer to resetting. Now, obviously, because of how bad Kentucky was for so long, it'll take a while for those expectations to reset, but eventually they will. And then eventually they're going to start asking, when are you going to improve upon what you continuously do?
See, I don't know.
I think
they're going to understand that, like, you're not going to get over the Georgia-Alabama hump.
Like, if Tennessee starts kicking his ass, like, if he loses to Tennessee, like, four straight years, maybe. Because maybe Kentucky thinks that, like, hey, we are at that level now where we should be, like, as good as them.
I think that's what they think.
No, right, I know. So, right. And they lost last year at home. That was a bad loss. Now, maybe in their heads they're blaming the officiating because, mm-hmm. That was a frustrating loss. And quite frankly, it was a statistical anomaly, right? Like, Kentucky didn't punt one time, right?
No.
They scored 42 points. You found a way to lose that game, though. So, like, I'm sure Kentucky fans feel like, hey, we were better than them. That's fine. But, like, if they come to Knoxville this year and get blown out, and they clearly go back to, like, the third team after Georgia, so, like, right back to the fourth team. And even maybe, like, if Shane Beamer catches him, and they're, like, down to fighting for fourth and, like, maybe fifth sometimes, and then maybe you're right, Charlie. But I just think as long as he's ruling off, like, 7-win seasons, he'll be fine there.
I just think eventually you get tired of that.
Maybe.
In Kentucky.
Maybe.
Because, we know how fan bases are.
Yeah.
You know how SEC fan bases are. And
I
think if I was Kentucky, I would actually be trying to move on from Mark Stoops within the next 2 years.
To do what?
What are you going to get to better, Bill? That's
we just talked about program building coaches. Well, then you get a guy that take the next step.
Well, the next
step. If I'm Kentucky, that's what I'm trying to do.
But the next
because
step.
Because if I'm Kentucky, the goal is to become a national title contender.
I think you're lying to yourself then.
No, I think if you were playing college football. If you are competing in college athletics, your goal should be your final goal should always be getting your program to a point where you're trying to win a national championship.
You gotta be realistic.
Yeah, you can. That is real. If you're not,
it's not realistic.
If you're not playing for championships, then why are you playing?
Then why does any Group 5 team ever play, Charlie?
It's not like there's some immediate path to doing it, but no matter who you are, there should be some sort of ultimate path to trying to get your place. Get to a point where you can win a national championship.
That's like saying every one of us sitting here should be striving to make $1 billion. Like, you just got to realize from almost everyone else, like, that's not going to happen. Like,
it's not the same thing.
It is kind of. Like, you have to be realistic about your expectations. Like, we could all want to date supermodels, but like,
if you're Kentucky,
maybe you just need to find a nice girl that's going to treat you well.
If you're Kentucky, it's not unrealistic to think that if
you
build your program to that.
Yes, it is. What do you mean it's not unrealistic?
I mean, they were once a really good football program.
When?
Like, when they had Bear Bryant, they've had success in the past, I guess. But
it's like
when the playing field was more level.
Regardless of that, though, they're an SEC school with fans, money, and other resources.
Do they have money? Because I don't even think the football program really even has money.
Yeah, no, they have money. They have money. I mean, they were offering $800K for Jordan Addison. Like, they have money. And further, like, so if you're Kentucky, you have to take risks to try to get to that next level. I mean, like, there are programs that you thought could never be that until they became that. But regardless, like, if I'm Kentucky, I am.
What programs would you say that about? Like, maybe Clemson? Maybe?
Yes. Oregon?
Oregon hasn't won a national championship.
No, but they've been in the points to compete for national championships. They've been in the playoffs.
At one point, but, like, the
and
rest.
They can easily get back to that.
I mean, you could say easily.
I
would
think
say
they've definitely,
like,
elevated their program to where they're considered on a higher tier. And I think Kentucky can. If I'm Kentucky, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm willing to take risks. After this, I would be willing to try to just pay and make someone the highest paid coach in college football to go get a really, really big name at Kentucky to try to take that program to the next level, because Mark Stoops has got it to a point where if you're ever going to have the opportunity to elevate the Kentucky football program, it's right now.
Like, when would you consider, like, Oregon to be anywhere near Kentucky? Because when I look through Oregon's, like, years, you know, they were ranked pretty much
like
every year starting in 2000.
Like, just past Webfoot.
They were ranked second in 2001. Like, going back to, like, the late 80s, they were at least top 25 teams at some point. Like, mm-hmm. Through 70 through 80, they had a down decade. But, like, going back to, like, the 50s, they were ranked teams. Like, when you do that with Kentucky, like, you know, they've been ranked, I mean, let's just from right here, like, so I guess Mark Stoops got them in the top 25 in 2018. Otherwise, in 2007, the year, I guess, they had Andre Woodson and beats, you know, LSU. They were number 8 in the country. Then the next time they were ranked, or the time before that, Cam, you have to go all the way down to 1984.
You know, I think Oregon's historically been a lot better than Kentucky.
So, like Kentucky spent time in the top 25 four times since 1985. That's not anywhere comparable to, like, what Oregon did.
I think Kentucky's one of those teams you can eliminate from ever winning a national title.
And I think they should be realistic about it. And, like, I think, like, they should be happy with just trying to win 8 or 9 games.
But
and
why can they not win a national title?
Because they are 8th or 9th at best in the pecking order, like, in terms of the SEC. Not even that. Like, 10th or 11th.
You should be working to change that.
How do you change it? You can't change your, like, geography. You can't change to be better, like, suited to recruit Southern talent. Like, you're always going to be fighting uphill against Louisiana and Tennessee and Georgia and Florida.
I mean, especially now.
Texas A&M.
Alabama. I mean, they've.
Obviously, Alabama. Yeah. I mean, like.
How do you change that? You
can't move your school.
How do you change that? Money. NIL. Hiring a better coach.
NIL's cool. Obviously, like, I love the money cannon here. Tennessee, it's helped. But, like, eventually we're going to get caught up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every school is going to eventually have this, and the money's going to be there. Like, Kentucky can't outbid everyone when it comes to. To football.
And when you say go get a better coach, what better coach are you going to go out there that's going to be like, yeah, I'll go down to Kentucky?
One that you give $12 million a year.
And it's going to take more than that.
One that you give $14 million a year.
Would Nick Saban even pick up the phone if they offered him $20
million? I don't think so.
Like, hey, $20 million to come do this?
I don't think so.
And again, I know we're talking about Clemson, but again, like, Clemson ranked the entire 2000s. Ranked basically all except like 3 years from 82 to 2001.
And Clemson's always been right there with a really fertile recruiting grounds as
right.
well. And
they were the number one team in the country in 1981, went 12-0. I assume won the national championship that year. Again, had a bad year from 76 to 62. They were unranked that entire time. Mm-hmm. But in the 50s and 60s, like, or I guess the late 50s and basically all the 50s were ranked again. Like, I just don't even really think they consider coming out of nowhere because they've always been relevant in college football. Segment was brought to you by Linderman Sports Medicine. I don't know if we can get you to become a national championship team, but we can get you back in the game. Over in Memphis, you can visit LindermanSportsMedicine.com and go see Dr. Laura Linderman in Memphis. People come from all over the state, all over the South, to get back in the game of life without surgery. Visit LindermanSportsMedicine.com. Stick with us to talk sports on Fan Run Radio. Last little segment here of hour two. So you talked about the Eagles getting Jamie Bradbury.
No, we have not talked about that yet.
Oh, you didn't talk about that? Oh, I thought you talked about that at the end of hour one.
No, we kept going with the baseball talk.
Gotcha. So the Eagles continue their offseason of trying to acquire talent by going out and getting Jamie Bradbury from the James Bradbury from the New York Giants.
They're going to win that division.
They're going to that division?
Yeah.
That's your take?
Even with Hurts as their quarterback, I think they still win that division. I mean, I think they have the best roster in the division. I don't think Dallas did anything to improve their roster over last year. If anything, they lost didn't they lose a receiver or two? I think they lost Gallup.
Amari Cooper.
Cooper's gone. I think Gallup left. Like. If anything,
they
I think
back Gallup.
No,
Gallup came back. Okay.
And they added
Cedric Wilson left. Yeah.
Yeah, but then they added also Jalen Tolbert in the second round.
Yeah, but I really don't think Dallas really improved their roster that much, you know, in the offseason, and I think the Eagles have, and I think Dallas already had some holes. They just,
I mean, I guess, is Jalen Hurts good enough though to elevate the Eagles over Dallas? That's probably the biggest question.
I think enough of just his running ability and the way they run the ball in that offense. And I think their defense is going to be pretty solid this year, is what I think. They have some really good pieces on that defense. I mean, you got Darius Slay and Bradbury holding down the corner spots. You got a pretty good front seven, which they've always had. They drafted a couple linebackers. They added Hassan Reddick as well for more pass rush. I think that defense is going to be problematic for a lot of those teams in the, you know, NFC East. Like, I don't think Dallas improved their offensive line, like, massively to where you're like, oh, yeah, they're going to be able to, you know, negate that pass rush and just that defensive line talent. So I think their defense is going to be really good, and I think you can do enough with Hurts. Like, I think you've seen worse quarterbacks, you know, win divisions with you know, comparable teams. So I think the Eagles are going to win that division. That's what I've decided. It's my first football hot take.
Are we still no repeat winner in that division for, like,
I want to say
over
for
like a decade now?
I want to say yes. I want to say it wasn't
it was
a repeat
the Commanders
last year.
2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And then Dallas again.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, I can also get behind the Eagles. Like, I also think that they're going to win that division.
What? Am I taking crazy pills? Jalen Hurts beat one team last year with a winning record, and it was the Saints, who were 5-4 when they beat them, and then finished the season 9-8. That's the only team he beat with a winning record last year. That's it.
Okay.
Like, his other wins, he beat Atlanta.
I don't have respect for the Cowboys.
Okay.
I mean, like, he beat Atlanta, Carolina, Detroit, Denver, again, the Saints, and then Washington twice, and the Giants. Like, oh, am I taking crazy pills? Now, all of a sudden, he's going to win a division?
I mean, this year they got open with Lions. You beat Lions, Vikings. You can win that. You got Commanders.
Where's the Vikings? Where's the Vikings game at? Because that's a Monday night football game.
In Philly.
And the Boo Birds are going to be out. The Boo Birds are going to be out whenever Jalen Hurts is throwing, you know, worm killers.
They have a chance to start the season.
They have the second easiest schedule in the NFL, according to the numbers we gave you with the, you know, based on Las Vegas' forecast. That's fine.
I mean, what? They won like 7 of their last 10 games though last year, right?
Again, they beat the Commanders twice.
Yeah, well, one of their
the
losses.
The Giants, the Broncos.
But one of the losses, the last
Detroit.
The last week of the year to the Cowboys was when they basically played a JV team.
I'm not even counting that.
Okay, so throw that out the window. So last 9, you win 7 of them.
That's fine.
And sure, they didn't come against.
You lost to the Giants. They had the playoffs on the line. They ended up still making it, obviously. But they had the playoffs on the line, and Jalen Hurts went 14 of 31 for 129 yards and 3 interceptions against the New York Giants. He scored 7 points.
The competition got easier, so that's it. But the decision you have to make is, did they start winning because the competition got easier, or it also just happens to coincide
when the competition got easier.
It happens to coincide too when they changed offensive philosophies, when they started utilizing the run game. I mean, you know, when they were losing early in the season, they were also not running the football at all. Mm-hmm. Then they switched and became, you know, the team that uses the run the most in the NFL.
Yeah, yeah.
Right there with the Titans, and they started playing to their quarterback strengths, and they started winning football games. So, yeah, the competition did get easier. So
the Giants,
if you want to justify it by saying the competition got easier, then yeah, sure.
The Giants, but I can also make the argument.
Well, they get those same teams again this year. Changed.
Yeah, but I'd imagine the Giants and Washington at least should be. I mean, maybe they'll be better.
You
I don't
like Carson Wentz. I'd take Carson Wentz twice anytime.
You would take Carson Wentz over what they had last year.
I'd take Taylor Heinicke.
I mean, you would not take Taylor Heinicke over Carson Wentz. No. No, 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 no. We don't have to make things up here.
I think I might.
That's because you like him. And you played high school football with him, but nobody else is. And I hate Carson Wentz. But no.
I actually like Carson Wentz.
I think the Eagles have improved their team, though, like as a whole.
That's fine, but like,
if you get any improvement from Hurts, I think you can win that division.
We'll see.
I don't know who the Cowboys have this year either.
The Cowboys, we said, had what, the 9th easiest schedule? So it's like they're having to go 10th easiest schedule. They're not going through like a murderer's row.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be tougher, obviously, as a first place schedule.
Yeah.
I just.
With the Bucks and Bengals.
Maybe he's going to get a lot better. I don't know, man. But the two games that stand out to me are the Giants game where they scored 7 points and he threw 3 interceptions and had 130 yards, And then that playoff game where Troy Aikman was, you know, so disgusted he went to ESPN, so he didn't have to call NFC games anymore.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm out.
I think the Cowboys open the season 2-5, and the Eagles going to start 4-0.
Okay.
Or 2-3, my bad.
Maybe. If you want to hit your wagon to Jalen Hurts as an NFL quarterback, you go right ahead and do it.
I'm hitching it to the roster, not Hurts.
Okay.
And the doubt of the Cowboys as well.
If they were starting Gardner Minshew, then I'd really be on the Eagles.
Yeah, maybe Gardner Minshew will come in and save them. Maybe. Hour two in the books, kick off hour three of headlines. It's Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio.
Hey, guys, if ED has got
Capitals,
you're listening to